Our yoga instructor challenged us to find inner peace. I found it faster than anyone. After 4 seconds, I stood up and screamed, "I found nirvana! I win!" They asked me to leave. I guess they don't respect winning. Bet365 does, though. New customers get $200 in bonus bets just for betting $10. Namaste, losers. Bet365. Winning is everything. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-MY-RESET. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
What about... No, I had one for the... Yo and go and gone.
Yo and go and gone?
Yeah.
Yo and go and gone?
Yo and go and gone.
Matt Finchat and Johan. Johan going. Come on, that's great.
Yo and going. Matt Finchat.
Chatfin Hall.
Chatfin Hall.
You've done it.
He's got it.
That's very good. Chatfin Hall. There we go. Do it. Do that. I knew I was close. Chatfin Hall.
Christ almighty.
That's fucking brilliant. That is like Chatfin Hall.
You love that, don't you?
That was supposed to be Chris, wasn't it?
No, I thought Chris was 2 and 4.
No, I'm 2 and 3. I'm 2 and 4.
Oh, you fucking ruined it already.
You have to do that again.
Hello and welcome back to Poppin' the Time. My name's Taylor Payne and it's a pleasure to be back in your ears once again. I've got Chris Woff and George Culkin with me. How the devil are you, Christopher Woff, in your Marseille shirt?
Hey, yeah, I've got Florian Thauvin on the back of this shirt, which was a sort of joke purchase a while ago. But anyway, I'm all right, thank you. Yeah, I've got 2 days left in my running challenge and I am going to actually ask Ollie to put the link in the show notes, because I have been a little bit reluctant to talk about too much up until this stage, mainly because I didn't actually think I'd get to the end of it. Now, maybe jinxing myself, but even if I have to crawl around the last 2 days, I really hope that I can actually complete this challenge for Tiny Life. So yeah, I am actually quite proud of myself, which I wouldn't usually say about
well
something
done, Chris.
What a legend.
We're
you
all
are.
Proud
You're
of you as well, Chris Woff.
Yeah.
You Thank fucking you. Legend.
Yeah, let me just interrupt the usual barrage of abuse I send in your direction. To say we're very proud of what you've done and what you're doing, and you're one of the great men of this world, and I'm very proud that you're in our lives. So well done. Carry on.
I'm filling up over here. My God.
Get over the finishing line.
Thank you very much.
Can we go back to normal now? Chris, how's your massive seal thighs getting on? Are they all right?
No, they're very much in pain, but yeah. They have not shrunk either over the course of these 28 runs, which is annoying. So.
No, they'll only get bigger, Chris, when you run every day. That's kind of how muscles work. How are you, George? You okay?
Yes, I'm all right. I'm finally back in God's own country, back in the Northeast, after an extended time in London. So I'm pleased to be back. I have to say it's felt like a bit of a long schlep. But yeah, I'm all right. How are you, Taylor?
I'm not too bad. I had a little weekend away. It was jolly good fun. I think the hangover's probably going to last longer than the actual weekend did. But, you know, that's what happens when you get our age, isn't it? I'm going to just bunch us all in together there.
Certainly is.
See?
The last thing that you needed to sort out your hangover was to chat to George and I about Newcastle United.
Absolutely. Just what we need.
In keeping with the general theme.
Put it this way. I know that I did watch the match on Saturday. I can't remember much of it, if I'm being honest.
It's probably not a bad thing, to be fair.
Right then, on this week's pod, we'll take a deep dive into Newcastle's striker dilemma. Are they misfiring or are they merely misunderstood? We will get into that. But first, headlines, boys, in 30 seconds or less. Chatfin Hall, Newcastle's big summit to begin.
Oh, I love that. Chapman Hall, that is so great. Yes, so delegation from PIF, Newcastle's ultimate owners, including Yasser Al-Rumayyan, are heading to the region for their annual off-site, as we are obligatorily have to call it, to discuss the club, what's happened over the past year, the plans for moving forward. It feels like it's a big deal this year because obviously the team have not been very good. And so we're all waiting to find out what happens. Everyone at the club is saying it's business as usual, but we shall see what comes of it.
Chris, Ewan going gone. Wissa sale will be explored.
That's another good one.
So this is, we report this on The Athletic on Monday, that Newcastle United will explore the sale of Ewan Wissa this summer. It's not that he will definitely leave, but there is the possibility that less than a year after Newcastle paid £55 million from on deadline day, having initially bid around £25 million for him, that Wissa, after a very, very difficult and challenging first season on Tyneside, will just be one season and gone.
Lass is half empty, George. Newcastle United women's team will not be promoted to the WSL this season.
They were indeed. They were beaten 2-1 at Bristol City. So that is that. I think it's been coming for a fair while now. They're in fifth. They end their season with a derby at home to Durham, which really annoyingly is at the same time as the men play Brighton. So they have to go again. There is huge ambition at the club. They want to reinvest and go again, but they've missed a big opportunity this season.
And last but not least, final Premier League date hammered out. And our live show with True Faith has dodged a potential fixture clash, Chris.
Yes, we had been making provisions behind the scenes because we realised a few weeks ago that actually Newcastle's final match of the season could be moved to the Monday, the 18th of May, which is when our sold-out live show is. But West Ham United, Newcastle's last home match, will actually be on the 17th of the Sunday, as it was scheduled to be. But now the weird, a new kickoff time of 5:30 because the FA want the Saturday just to be for the FA Cup final. So yes, thankfully that Newcastle's last home game and the live show will go ahead on the scheduled date.
Right then, chaps. Matfin Hall, let's start there. The owners are in town, and George is still chuckling at the stupid pun that we put in the headlines at the top of the show. Well done, George Colgan, for being a grown-up.
So I just want to, you know, maybe we shouldn't, you know, do the kind of Wizard of Oz things, go behind the curtain. But I stumbled across our running order, as I often do, last minute, and I just thought the headlines, they were so boring. I came up with Matfin chatting, and then Ollie, producer, already changed that to Chapman Hall. I'm just so proud of that. I think that is the crowning achievement of for Pod on the Tyne this season, arguably.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I agree with you, but fair enough, if that's what you want.
Chapman Hall.
Chapman Hall's excellent.
Chapman Hall.
It tells you a lot, though, that
it works because
it was Ollie who came up with it and not one of us three. The two professional journalists and the host of the show.
It works because it sounds a bit like Matfin.
It does.
And they're going to be chatting when they're there.
Yes.
And Chapman sounds a bit like chatting.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why it works, Taylor, just to let you know.
Just on removing myself from this chat about Chapman, what's been fascinating from my perspective of looking into it is there is so much intrigue, particularly from the Athletic sort of desk, like our editors, but also I know that it's the case with, if you look across the board, basically all coverage on a national level or even local level of Newcastle United with what is happening this week, and that's largely because of what is happening on the field at the moment, the struggles Newcastle appear to be going through, the fact that Yasser Al-Rumayyan is flying in, that it's rare for a club, I suppose, to have these off-site meetings, and Newcastle themselves have drawn attention to it previously with the Amazon Prime documentary when they were at Alnwick Castle for one of these sort of meetings, and it was sort of almost aggrandized in that respect. But at the same time, you speak to some people in Newcastle and they are almost baffled by, they're either feigning bafflement, and I think to a degree some of them maybe, but I think there is also general bafflement. I was asking someone at the club about it at the start of the week, just sort of saying, basically saying that there will be a lot of attention around this, and the response was almost, really, why is this week any different? Because I hadn't specifically mentioned Matt Van Hoorn. It's like, well, because there's these meetings going on at Matt Van Hoorn. It's because for them, this is a normal board meeting, which they have semi-regular board meetings, yeah. But these in-person ones, there tends to be one of these big ones, these big off-sightings once a year. Last year, I think it was slightly earlier. It was in sort of February time. And yeah, it's just interesting to have that sort of the two different strands of it there. That on one sense, it's like, this is just business as usual. And then for everyone else, for the outside world, this feels huge. And it's sort of like, it's the reality is somewhere in between, probably.
Is it because of the mystery around it and stuff? And that there's a bit of a shroud over it all, isn't there? And I think people want to know what's being said, but there will be a lot of dull shit getting talked about at the time as well.
Yeah, but
I think there's a lot of big decisions that people are waiting to find out about, isn't there?
I think that's right. But it's also because, you know, this is the kind of the one or a very rare opportunity they get to be in front of Yasser Al-Rumayyan. You know, we know that kind of PIF are hands-off owners. They leave the running of the club to the people on the ground. And so this is seen as a chance to sort of get in front of him, you know, if things are going badly, to try and explain why. If things are going well, to try and, you know, encourage his interest and, you know, potentially investment. When it's quite ironic, we know that a year and a bit ago, when the last one of these things happened, everybody was shown sort of, you know, really impressive videos of what a new stadium could look like, and everybody was really excited and talked about how emotional that was and big it felt. And of course, here we are a year on, and not a lot has actually happened. So it feels like this, but I mean, you know, is this business as usual this year? Well, yeah, of course, in that sense that Chris mentioned, but it's very much not in the other sense, which is that previously Newcastle have been succeeding, or at least most of the time. In March last year, Newcastle were on their way to winning a trophy. They would finish last season a Champions League place, etc., etc. This is not that version of Newcastle in terms of where they are in the league. It looks pretty desperate. And so, you know, it means that there is a heightened atmosphere around the club. So they can say it's business as usual, but on the pitch, it certainly hasn't been.
Chris, is this these conversations something that Eddie Howe should be worried about?
Well, Eddie Howe, we believe, is going to go and present. That's what usually happens. They're basically usually the heads of department have sort of presentations that they basically give to Yasser Al-Rumayyan and the PIF delegation of what has happened at the club over the course of the last 12 months, their vision for moving forward, and for how it's going to be important for him to sort of try and explain away certainly the league form this season, and also to really hammer home how and why he believes he's the man to take Newcastle United forward. I don't think he should be worried, in that I'd be shocked if there is suddenly an announcement on Thursday, which is the main day of the meetings, or Friday, that suddenly there's been a decision made there and then on Eddie Howe's future. Certainly if it was that Newcastle were going to part company with him, I can't see that being immediate. It's very rare that PIF, as we keep saying, PIF very rarely make decisions very quickly.
Yeah.
But I think it could be important for any decision which is made further down the line. If whatever Eddie Howe says doesn't convince the ownership that actually he is the right man to lead the rebuild, and that he can actually turn around what has become a chronic decline of the side, certainly in 2026 so far in the Premier League, then yeah, it could have a big bearing, but I don't think it'll be a big immediate bearing. I just think it's one of many factors over the course of the next few weeks. He certainly can't point to results in that right now. David Hopkinson spoke during the international break, and Newcastle tried to roll back on it slightly, maybe in what he did say, but he basically talked about the plan is for Newcastle to end the season well. Well, they've then lost the subsequent three matches, so that hasn't gone well in terms of how it affects Eddie Howe's future. So this is something else which he can directly influence, and he needs to perform well in front of them, really, in terms of whatever he says.
You would presume that delegation will be at St James's Park on Saturday as well, George, wouldn't you?
Yes, I mean, that's often how it's been. We know that, certainly know that some of them will be. And, you know, that'll give them a chance to put their eyes on this Newcastle team and listen to what is said within the stadium. Obviously, we know it's been uncomfortable in recent home matches. So, yeah. You know, Eddie Howe knows that he needs a win. They have to get a win from somewhere. And there have to be, you know, there have to be signs that there's something to build on. As Chris said, it's the heads of department. So, you know, there'll be infrastructure discussions, the recruitment department. Yeah. That, you know, those discussions will be interesting after what happened last summer. Not all their fault, of course, we know that. But also you want sort of people to hopefully take responsibility and, you know, sort of try and explain what has happened, why it happened, And yeah, you want, whether it's Howe or whether it's the others, you want to feel that there's a real sort of solid plan to change things around, to move things forward. And I think that's what people will be looking for. And then it's about looking and observing and watching, seeing what happens on the pitch, and then, you know, coming to sort of reasonable decisions on whatever subjects it may be.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Strike a light. Brighton are in tune this weekend. One thing Newcastle will have to do if they want to win that game is score a goal, probably three the way they're defending, but that's an entirely different conversation altogether. Eddie Howe's team selections have raised several thousand eyebrows lately, but no more than with his strikers. €130 million worth of talent have been regularly sat on the bench, with makeshift frontman Anthony Gordon and work in progress Will Asula carrying the bulk of the minutes.
Why are we using euro currency? Is this just simply because we're going to be focusing on Nick Voldemort, or have we just decided that is the currency parlance?
Maybe the exchange rate's better at the minute, Chris.
All right, okay, yeah.
I think we're all moving back towards Europe, aren't we? Yeah. That seems to be the... Can't rely on the Americans anymore, so we can't talk in dollars. You know, our country's absolutely screwed.
Yeah,
so
the pound's fucked, isn't it, if
alignment
to
Europe. Yeah,
absolutely.
Sounds more glamorous, doesn't
it? But also sounds more, because it is more in terms of literally as a number, if you say it in euros, than in pounds. So I suppose in that sense as well.
More of an impact, isn't it? Well, Asula was scoring, and that was the answer Howe gave when asked why he wasn't picking those big money men. That high-profile miss early on against Arsenal. Bren on Discord asks whether the plan is to move him on this summer. Chris, let's go to you with this.
Well, I think there are a lot of moving parts as to what happens with several players this summer, one of which is Howe's own future and his influence over that. But it also, well, as we're going to come on to, what happens with Johan Wisser and also Nick Voldemort. But I think, whereas the plan previously seemed to be that Will Asula, I mean, he could have left on deadline day last summer, and Newcastle at the time and Howe at the time would have been quite comfortable with that. I think now it's actually looking more likely that Will Asula could be here next season. He's shown that stylistically, at least he's more suited to what Howe wants, and I think that they are starting to see a bit more development from him. I don't think Newcastle want him or Howe believe that he's necessarily someone who should be leading the line week in, week out in the Premier League. If Newcastle were to start next season and Will Asula is their main striker, I think there would be concerns. But I could certainly see him now being here as a second or third choice. I think it has changed in that regard. But as I say, there are a lot of moving parts regarding Asula and so many other players there.
Voldemort and Wisser both made it onto the pitch for a decent chunk of that second half, George, didn't they? The German actually providing impotence. I mean, it works, doesn't it?
I think that's been the problem.
It's still there. That's the issue, isn't it? Attacking impotence.
I think the problem with Newcastle this season generally has been attacking impotence, Taylor.
Yeah.
You're right to say that. Don't want to just Walter Marder with that brush. Well, Walter Marder came on in the 75th minute. Is that a decent amount of time? I mean, not hugely. I mean, it was interesting
compared
that
what he
comes
been
on
getting,
before
I think
then.
It is, isn't it? He's 5-10
well,
minutes here.
Well, yeah, there. Yeah. And immediately after Arsenal, Eddie Howe talked about the pair of them and where they are in terms of fitness, form, selection.
There's reasons why those players haven't necessarily come in and played the amount of games that they have. I mean, Johan's case, of course, he's still finding his best rhythm. Nick, I think, will be so much better for this season and hasn't been able to train with us. And we're beginning to see him look a lot sharper and a lot more athletic based on the 3 weeks training that he's had with us. So I've been really pleased with that response from him. So I think we need to give these players time. And as I said in the press conference on Friday, we'll be a lot better, or those players will be a lot better next year for this season.
I mean, it was an absolutely beautiful, beautiful pass that he played for Wisser, that sort of lovely little chipped, delicate lob. And then Wisser, you know, Wisser does not bury that opportunity, does he? And that sort of tells its own story. But it does, you know, it also tells us a bit about Walter Marder. Like, we know he's got this, like, beautiful, cultured ability on the ball. He can be creative. It was interesting. I mean, I thought one of the really interesting things about that match overall was seeing a slightly different version of the team, with Joe Willock actually starting in a very elevated position on the pitch, sort of, you know, in a number 10-ish kind of role, maybe, you know, sort of getting up forward and trying to carry the ball forward, but with a free roll. And then Walter Marder sort of carried that on, and, you know, Newcastle under Howe don't play a number 10, but he was playing much more of that sort of role, it felt to me. And, you know, perhaps that is an answer moving forward. Yeah. But, you know, again, we're still in this position, aren't we, where, you know, at the back, Newcastle are changing their goalkeepers all the time. And then up front, it feels like a jigsaw where the pieces are missing. And, like, really, like, when you're talking about those two absolutely vital areas of the field, there's this huge uncertainty about the team. And it's like, that's stopping goals and scoring goals. That is, you know, that is a recipe for failure. And that is what Newcastle are doing at the minute.
With Walter Marder, Chris, he's a German international, isn't he? He has got some class in him. You know, he wears big wide-legged corduroy chinos, for God's sake, and puffer jackets. The man can do pretty much anything.
Except sing.
He definitely can't do that.
I'm gonna swing from the chandelier. From the chandelier.
You want to discuss the Walter Marder culture wars, don't you?
Yeah, I suppose that's how I've sort of termed it a little bit. I think that it's almost, and this is very much a crude way of looking at things, and probably boxes people into, places people into boxes they don't necessarily want to be in. I'll probably get a lot of flack for this. But
what kind of box would you want to be in?
Phone box, I don't know.
Yeah, phone box, if you needed to make a phone call. Yeah, I mean, very old-fashioned, but yeah, no good.
Box of sausages.
Yeah,
Anyway. A box of tricks.
But I think you can almost, in a very crude way, look at it as the very Eddie Howe out camp. I think a large proportion of those are very pro-Walter Marder, and then the opposite for the Eddie Howe in camp. That's not, I'm not trying to homogenise everyone. That is, I'm sure a lot of people in each of those two camps will probably push back at me on that. But it feels like that is one of the sticks, the main sticks to beat Howe with at the moment, is that from those people who say that he's ruining this wonderful talent, this wonderful player. He doesn't know how to use them, and you know, he's basically hanging them out to dry. And I get that to a certain degree, and I understand it, and he clearly is an extremely talented footballer, a unique footballer, and what he can bring profile wise. And, yeah, Howe hasn't worked out how to get the best out of him. The counter-argument would be, or part of the counter-argument would be, has Walter Marder managed to get enough out of himself? Now, I got asked a question about this on The Athletic on Monday in my live Q&A, and I've seen a lot of stuff online about the points return when Walter Marder has started up front. And it was better when he started up front relative to when he didn't in the first two-thirds of the season. Now, I think it's unfair to just extrapolate that beyond and say that Newcastle's points have dropped because Walter Marder wasn't in. If you actually look at it at that point when Walter Marder didn't start matches, it still was better, but I think it was 0.5 points better. Whereas if you take it out the rest of the season when Newcastle's form has collapsed, yes, it does look so much better. But my own view on things is that the team wasn't actually functioning as well as people say that it did then. Now, I think it's almost looking back at that in a different way. Newcastle were managing to find results, and I think it was almost in spite of that. Walter Marder had a wonderful start. His finishing was brilliant. He scored his first 6 shots on target, which also says a lot about how few opportunities he was getting. And Newcastle didn't adapt well enough to accommodate Nick Walter Marder, and I don't think Walter Marder managed to impose himself well enough all-round game. He did with his goals early on. Now, is it fair that he hasn't played as much subsequently? I think no, he probably should have had more opportunities, but I don't think it's as clear-cut as necessarily as people have been making out on it. And no, all of the discourse seems to be around Voldemort at the minute. And what I find fascinating, and part of the reason is you're going to introduce another voice in a second if someone asks about him, is that I've listened to a lot over the course of the last 48 hours of people telling, a lot of people from the Newcastle persuasion telling me how he plays for Germany or how he's used for Germany. And my thought on that was, well, I don't know necessarily how he's used for Germany. So let's hear from someone who does actually watch him regularly for Germany and how maybe Newcastle could try and get more out of him, rather than us just discussing it and saying, theoretically, should he be used as number 10 or whatever, how is he actually used for Germany?
Yes, as I'm sure you're already aware, dear listener, we are ill-equipped as a source of information about the Bundesliga. Usually, we'd overcome that via the medium of waffling. Luckily, on this occasion, the Athletic's German football correspondent owed Chris a favour. Here is that man, Seb Stafford-Bleuer, on Nick Voldemort's rapid rise to fame.
Yeah, at the point where he left Germany, Voldemort was a really good news story because obviously he joined Stuttgart in 2024 and within a year had become one of the best attacking players in the Bundesliga. He'd also become a German international and it was a great story. And so it's people kind of invested in it and there was really very little criticism because you know what it's like when a player accelerates through the game and rises quickly. People don't really pay attention to any flaws or faults. I think a lot of people accepted, hey, he's got a lot to learn. He's still adapting to senior football and that showed occasionally. But everything was good. And I think also this is blended with a Stuttgart team who are very, very good to watch and whose style really suited him. So what they had was, you know, a lot of positional rotation, a lot of short, sharp build-up play. Whenever Voldemort received possession, often in that kind of number 10 slot, a lot of things would happen around him, whether it be, you know, typically play with someone like Dennis Undav, the former Brighton forward, who's become very prolific since returning to the Bundesliga, or Emadin Demirovic, who he was signed to replace Zahiri Guirassy, much more of an orthodox number nine, but someone who also shared the goal-scoring burden. And yeah, it was kind of a centre-forward by committee situation mixed in with some really fun players to watch, like Chris Furyk or Angelo Stiller or Maxi Mittelstädt down the left side. There were some very interesting things happening at Stuttgart and Voldemort just suited it. Since he left, I don't know that people have paid that much attention. English football is big in Germany, but it tends only to kind of break through in big moments. The kind of the week-to-week trials and tribulations of Newcastle United don't tend to attract a lot of attention. Every now and again, when Voldemort has received criticism from some of the English media, people have had a go back, particularly because Julian Nagelsmann has kind of vigorously defended his abilities and his role and has been pretty forthright in saying that he's going to go to the World Cup and that he doesn't really care how Eddie Howe has been using him and he's not troubled by, you know, where on the pitch he's used or, you know, what his goal scoring record is. But I also think heading into the World Cup, Havertz would be the first choice. He would play as the sort of 9/10 in the front three with Florian Wirtz and Jamal Musiala. That would be Nagelsmann's first choice. If Nagelsmann were to need a change of direction, I think the next choice would be Undav, just because nobody has scored more goals in the Bundesliga this season other than Harry Kane. He's been very, very impressive. And then Voldemort. He's not as good a goal scorer as Undav. He doesn't do as much as Havertz in terms of using space and bringing those twin number 10s into the play. So he's probably the third choice and would probably be used as really more of a number 9, I think. That's me guessing. I don't know yet, really. But we'll see.
Centre forward by committee, George. Do we think that's similar to what Eddie Howe was trying to do or wanted to do with Nick Voldemort?
Yeah, it's a kind of very interesting way of putting it. I mean, we have to kind of, I suppose, step back to last summer to see what Newcastle was sort of originally trying to do. They needed a replacement for Callum Wilson, of course, and then Isak goes very late. You know, it's ancient history, but the idea was that kind of Johan Wisse slips straight into the team, gives Newcastle a recognisable profile, obviously much less good without Isak, but sort of recognisable, and that Walter Marder, who was kind of viewed as this wild card with a completely different profile, gradually acclimatises, comes on for matches, plays in some cup games, and, you know, that was the sort of big idea. I think what's done, I mean, everything about last summer has turned out to be damaging, effectively. The damaging thing, really, with Eddie Howe is that he hasn't been able to find answers or convincing answers. Now, you know, there's a lot of mitigation for that. But if you're a fan, you've seen Walter Marder come into the team and score those early goals. Thank goodness he did score those goals. He needed to. And, you know, we see those glimpses of like beautiful talent. So you know that that player's there. And it's like, I don't know, it sort of reminds me in some ways, you know, when Chris talks about the Walter Marder culture wars, it's a bit like Hatem Ben Arfa, like when you know you've got this wonderfully gifted footballer and, you know, the manager is just unable to sort of accommodate him or bring the best out of him and things like that. And, you know, there's, you know, the club's position is very different to how it was back then. You know, if you talk to Alan Pardew about Ben Arfa in private, he would say the rest of the team weren't having him. And, you know, he didn't track back, he didn't defend, and like he'd lost the faith of his teammates. He couldn't play him. That was his sort of reasoning. That was his excuse. Now it's absolutely not the case that Nick Walter Marder is like that. He's well liked within the group. He's been very popular. He's settled off the pitch very, very quickly. But it's definitely true that they haven't found a way of like unlocking the very special footballer he is. It's very difficult to do that when you've got a glut of matches. But the thing is, there's sort of been no sign of it really. And, you know, like, I hate this sort of division and the feeling that there are camps that, you know, that Chris talked about, but it's very difficult to get away from it because they spent a record fee on him. People have seen signs of what he could do, and so people naturally expect that he should do it again. By the way, he scored 10 goals so far in his first season at Newcastle. That's the same as Alexander Isak in his first full season. Isak played a lot fewer games.
Yeah, Isak had an injury. I have seen that start, and I do get it, but Isak was injured for the first few months of it. So, but no, it's still a very good goals return. I just want to jump in to add to what George was saying about last summer, and that Nick Walter Marder was not initially one of the strikers Newcastle were looking at, partly stylistically, partly because there was an assumption early in the summer that he would go to Bayern Munich, who made three bids for him and failed to sign him. Then there was an assumption for a long period of time that Stuttgart just were not going to sell him. But also, as I said before, it wasn't stylistically what Newcastle were looking for, and I think there were some concerns about how he would necessarily adapt immediately to the Premier League, particularly without a pre-season. But they were boxed into a corner, they were desperate really by the end, and they moved quickly for it and were very excited by him. But the word behind the scenes was that Howe had decided Newcastle needed to evolve in the way that they played, to play with Walter Marder, because he was so different to Isak and he was so different to Wilson and the sort of strikers he played with before. The issue has been that Newcastle haven't evolved.
Yeah.
And so that isn't on Walter Marder itself, that's on Newcastle. And Howe will point to a lot of mitigating reasons as to why that hasn't happened. But the problem is that you had that outlay on him and then the team has not evolved to the extent that it should have done to have been able to accommodate Walter Marder.
And if we're also kind of not casting blame, that's not quite the right phrase, but his teammates haven't brought the best out of him. You know, you're also looking for players to kind of work things out, and I don't feel like they've done that enough. And I mean, he also has a responsibility, so we don't get to see what he's like on the training pitch. I know that there's a kind of feeling amongst some around, you know, around the first team dressing room that he sort of eased off a bit after making that early impact. And not saying he went into a comfort zone, but he wasn't quite doing it in the same way that he should have been. And, you know, he's a young player in a new country, adapting to a new team, adapting to a new life. But that was a very strong feeling. So it's incumbent on him to prove that he's worthy of a place. The same applies to Johan Wisse. You know, that horrible injury took a long time to get fit, and then there's been some concern, you know, about his lack of impact in training. He's got to do it. They've all got to do it. And, you know, there's also been a previous clamour for Wolasulo to play, by the way, or to get more minutes. And he's been given that on the basis of what he's doing in training and then what he's done when he's come on in matches. So it feels like if it's a failure, it's a kind of institutional failure. It's not just on Eddie Howe, it's on everybody.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
The Johan Guissa situation is much more damning for Newcastle, though, isn't it? Everyone's been reminded by Chris's article this week that not only did we pay £55 million for Guissa, we also allowed Brentford to insert a 25% sell-on clause. It's like having your pants pulled down while simultaneously getting a wedgie, isn't it, Chris?
How can that be physically possible?
That's what happened. That is exactly what happened. Nobody's he'd have to
right,
wait.
Okay, you're not going to... You're
two
not
pairs
gonna,
of underpants.
Newcastle have defied physics once again.
You've read these words out and you're not prepared to explain your words,
well,
Taylor.
Well, because you can have your pants pulled down, George, which doesn't mean your underpants, does it? You could have your pants pulled down while your underpants are hoisted. Therefore,
all right,
the two things have happened at the same time. Clever clogs.
I've never subscribed to this Geordie, this one element of Geordie culture where you call trousers pants. So I'll do the rest of it. I'll do all of it. It's too confusing. It's like we've got to be a little bit more original. You can't call your pants and you also call your pants pants.
Why?
Well, if you are, you're going to have to call them your pants and then your underpants.
Then my underpants and then my outer pants.
Anyway, on your Whistler.
Oh, Chris. Chris, you're so boring.
Yeah, I know. on Whistler, that one is more damning in many ways than Voldemort. And Newcastle wanted Voldemort in the end. Whissa, they signed and wanted him in the sense that they wanted a striker. But even until the final throws, really, they were trying to sign Jorgen Strand Larsen that week and would have probably paid £65 million to sign Strand Larsen if Wolves had shown any inclination to actually do a deal, which would have even been more than they paid for Whissa. He was younger, Strand Larsen, but they actually preferred that profile of player and who he was. They tried from early on to get Whissa. Their initial bid was £25 million, but it was not as if they were necessarily going all out for that. Whissa was the striker they thought should have been Callum Wilson's replacement, as it was at that stage, and as it turned out that he was anyway. Well, Voldemort became the replacement for Isak once the Isak situation was resolved in the sense that he was going. But Newcastle always wanted a striker. João Pedro, Hugo Ekitike, Liam Delap, very early on they were in for Delap. The Sesko situation was slightly different. That was almost to try and facilitate Isak's exit at that stage. If that signed Sesko, would have more facilitated that. But generally, the other players you're talking about were meant to be that replacement for Wilson. Whissa was desperation in the end. Eventually, Brentford, who'd been adamant they weren't going to sell him in the similar way that Newcastle were with Isak, said £55 million, 25% sell-on clause, take it or leave it right at the end. And Newcastle decided to take it, despite, as I say, that initial bid of £25 million. Yeah. And unfortunately, that just hasn't worked out from the very start. Before he'd even trained at Newcastle, he went away with DR Congo, got injured, doesn't make an appearance until December, actually scores a couple of goals early on, and a couple early appearances, and there's a bit of excitement there. Oh, this, I remember so much at the time. I pushed back on it slightly. I'm not just trying to be I'm not trying to say, oh, well done me, but at the time I was sort of slightly pushing back on it because people were like, oh, it's great having a proper centre forward on the pitch.
I said that, Chris.
But
well done me, George. You're a fuckwit. Thanks a lot, Chris. Thank you. Just say what you mean.
And subsequently, obviously, it just hasn't worked. He hasn't been able to get himself fully fit. He hasn't looked fully fit. Confidence has clearly been affected. Howe's confidence in him clearly has been affected because he hasn't been able to get the minutes. And yeah, Newcastle, as I said, as we've written, will explore the possibility of him going. That is not the same as him definitively leaving, because if there isn't a market for him and if there is an uptick, Newcastle have actually thought over the last couple of weeks in training, Whissa's impressed a bit more relative to previously. He scored in a couple of behind closed doors friendly matches. I think they've seen a little bit more from him. That's probably why he got more time at Arsenal than he has done in the subsequent few weeks. And it also depends on the alternative market as well as to who Newcastle could potentially bring in. So it's not the same as he's definitively going, but it still is remarkable in many ways that Newcastle paid £55 million for a 28, 29-year-old and a year on they basically are considering cutting the losses.
Just one little thing to mention, whether it's interest or not, is that Ekitike was the one that they saw as having a higher ceiling than Isak even. And so when Liverpool got both of them, it was doing them in twice over. That was a huge, huge, huge disappointment. And the way it was put to me by sort of senior people is that when it got to that final moment, Wissa was on a list of one, and Walter Marder was on the list of three or four, and the others were just wrong, were just not right. And I only mention that just as a reminder about the, you know, about that awful position, a lot of it self-inflicted, that Newcastle found themselves in, people doing jobs they shouldn't have been doing, no leadership there, no sporting director, no chief executive there, and this entire summer of saying that Isak was not for sale, even though it felt like him leaving was the only outcome that was logical at that point, and then getting rid of him at the final minute, for all the repercussions that has had, it is just disastrous. It's not all on one person, but it's not how a big club should be run. It's not how an elite club should be run. It's so damaging, and like it or not, we're still feeling it now.
Chris, we've had Schulze on Discord has asked, how would selling Wissa or Valtimara for a loss affect SCR rules?
Yes, so SCR squad cost rules are replacing PSR for the Premier League's sort of financial regulations. So moving forward, theoretically, it's not as damaging as if the PSR framework was still in place, but there is still a significant knock-on effect from it. Newcastle would still be affected by that. So yes, they would be cutting their losses to a certain degree, but if they were to get one of substantial wages from either of them off the books, then what a lot of clubs are looking at now is that it's not just, and this is more important with SCR, is it's not just transfer fee that you have to take into account, that there is a squad cost to a player which is carried over time, which is both the transfer fee that was paid initially, the agent's fees, and also the wages that you pay for that player. And those wages would be removed from this, so the squad cost would go down. So that's a very basic way of saying it will still affect them, but probably not to the extent that it would have done under PSR.
Yeah, I'd just like to repeat everything that Chris has just said.
Thanks, George.
Which is a joke that nobody will get if Ollie's actually clipped my previous remarks out. The one thing to say is that there is just a mood around the top of the club that they have no fear about unpicking mistakes. If we want to describe them as mistakes, they know that what happened was really costly and difficult. But David Hopkinson, Ross Wilson weren't around. I think there is a mood that, you know, they, if it means taking a loss, they will take a loss. They'll suck it up because they know that, you know, the way that they would look at it is that, you know, there's no point keeping hold of a player if that asset is depreciating. You just get rid of it, you cut your losses and you go again, you hold your hands up and say this hasn't worked and move on from it, as opposed to keeping that player around. I think there is that mood is around the club this summer.
Newcastle are in the market for another striker though, Chris, aren't they?
Yes, and this is what I sort of touched upon this in the will explore selling Wissa situation, that Newcastle do want another striker. The problem is, and they would refer to this as last summer as well, but even more so now, that the striker market is thin and there isn't huge choice out there. What can they actually bring in? The likelihood is, if they do bring a striker in, it probably will be a younger striker, maybe not sort of 18, 19, but early 20s, I would have thought, and probably raw in some ways and need developing. But yeah, Newcastle do want to sign a striker. They may even sign two if players were to leave. And if Anthony Gordon, which is about to touch on, does go as well, then they also lose their winger come striker, and so then they may need to look for flexibility in other areas for people who can play through the middle. So yes, a lot for Newcastle United to do this summer.
So what about Anthony Gordon then, Chris?
Well, I've led a piece on The Athletic, which has gone up this week, on Anthony Gordon and sort of what we're hearing about his future, and all the noises seem to point to an increasing likelihood that Gordon will leave Newcastle this summer. I think almost all parties probably accept that's probably the way that it needs to go now. I think it feels that it's time for Gordon to go. There was obviously the very damaging situation of June 2024, and the move that didn't happen for Gordon to his boyhood club, Liverpool. And I was after his magnificent 2023-24 season.
Yes.
And certainly consistency-wise, he hasn't been the same player since. Definitely wasn't last season. This year in the Champions League, he's hit huge heights. He's got 17 goals in all competitions. If you just look at it purely numbers-wise and externally, if you look at Gordon this season, you see a lot of people saying, well, he's the one who's really performed. I don't think it necessarily feels that way for a lot of Newcastle fans who watch him week in, week out. Certainly in the Premier League, it hasn't felt like he's turned up often enough or really delivered the heights often enough. Howe basically confirmed earlier in the season that Gordon doesn't want to play on the right, so he has to either play down left through the middle. It also feels, as well as the fact that stylistically Gordon suits playing through the middle, I do think there's almost a way of trying to stimulate him as well by playing him through the middle for Newcastle to try and get more out of him, him being the main man, sort of play to that, I suppose, ego, yeah, probably is the right word. And Newcastle, we know, particularly not being in Europe, will probably need to sell, or well, do want to sell in order to really finance the rebuild that they're going to look to do this summer. And selling Johan Wisse, for example, is not going to massively help that, because they're probably not going to recoup that much and they're going to have those SCR issues I mentioned just before.
Yeah.
Whereas Anthony Gordon, there is the hope and belief that they would be able to bring in enough money. So yeah, essentially it looks at this stage that of all the players being linked away, Gordon is if not the most likely, then one of the most likely to potentially go.
Let's check in again with Seb in that case for more info on that interest in Anthony Gordon from Bayern Munich.
The situation with Anthony Gordon is quite simple. Bayern are interested, but then Bayern are interested in a lot of different players. Their other options in his role include Yann Diamande, the RB Leipzig winger, who's had an incredible season. The trouble with him is that he's going to be very, very expensive. So Leipzig have always said, we're going to want 100 million euros at least for him. Added to which, Leipzig are on course to qualify for the Champions League again, having finished seventh last season, which necessitated that series of sales. So Šeško and Javi Simons and Lois Openda, they all had to leave because to kind of fill the budgetary gap. This summer, not such an issue. I don't personally think that Diamandi will move anywhere this summer. I think he'll be there for another year at least. And so that brings Gordon into the equation. There is obviously a complication, which is, where does Anthony Gordon fit in? I don't know, and I'm not sure we're quite at the stage where that needs to be talked about, because obviously Bayern are not short of attacking options. It's difficult to see them going to the kind of figures that I've seen reported in English media. Bayern do not spend like an English club. Their record transfer is the 100 million euros they spent on Harry Kane. They spent nearly 75 on Luis Diaz last summer. I don't think they would get to that kind of level for someone like Anthony Gordon, good player though he is, because he's not necessarily filling an immediate need. And Bayern have other priorities. They need probably a central midfielder. They probably need a few more options across their defence. But that aspect of it is just my opinion. It's not based on reporting. But that's the situation at the moment.
Links to Arsenal seem to have cooled a little bit as well, slightly, but there is genuine interest in the Premier League as well. And Newcastle will want a bidding war, won't they, George?
Well, they want as much money as they can get for him, definitely. But what they want to avoid is Isak and that scenario. So
a long drawn out.
Yeah, a bidding war which ends with incremental prices going up and, you know, nobody knowing what's happening is absolutely the last thing that they want. So, you know, in the end, they got more money for Isak than they were originally offered by Liverpool, but at what cost? And you would say that the cost was absolutely, you know, was absolutely not worth it. So that really is the priority. And the priority is about being ahead of the game. Now, we know that, you know, David Hopkinson has talked about being better sellers and, you know, trading in and out. That is just... that is the priority. And there is really a feeling that they're trying to get ahead of the game. So those conversations will be going on now. They'll be sort of testing the market to see who might be there for their players, as well as trying to make inroads on their own targets. All of those things will be going on at the moment. The last thing they want is to have disaffected players hanging around the place or just that sense of limbo. They cannot do it.
Will there be any benefit, Chris, with regards to amortisation?
Yeah, so this is something up on the running order, because it was a question which actually came into Extra Time last week, which I didn't get the chance to answer, but someone had asked about the fact that Newcastle paid the initial £40 million to Everton in a lump sum, and whether that means that basically Newcastle have already paid that off and they get all the benefit from it. That's not actually how it works in a accounting way, really. So actually, that £40 million, it didn't matter that Newcastle paid that as cash up front. That was still amortised, as you say. It spread over the course of his contract from a book value for Newcastle. So if it was a five-year contract initially, it would still have been £8 million per year. He subsequently signed another contract, so that will have changed. But Newcastle will get a benefit because they have already... I think he's now somewhere around probably about the £35 million book value for Newcastle. So if they do get the fee that they want, or anywhere close to the fee that they want, which is believed to be around £80 million, they would get a substantial benefit from that. So yeah. Yes, there is an amortisation benefit, but not in the sense of the question being asked, which was the cash. The cash is different, and I realise we're getting into accounting terms, but I just wanted to explain that slightly different.
Fair play. Do we think there's a chance of him being fit for Brighton, George? The wingers haven't exactly been hitting the heights recently, have they? We could do with Anthony Gordon at full tilt.
Yeah, I mean, Anthony Elanga had his little moment, but doesn't feel like he's really sort of pushed on. It felt like that might be happening. So again, those players are, kind of coming on and it's much in a muchness, or it doesn't kind of quite work. Anthony Gordon, I think we think will be doubtful for Brighton, but not completely ruled out yet. We know that Gillington will be back from his suspension, so that's welcome. But yeah, like most parts of the team, it just feels like a sort of unfinished work.
It certainly does. It's a right old mess and no mistake, I think is the term we'll use. Martin on Blue Sky has said, can you ask Alan from work to go in and help them?
I could make the request, I can make the request.
Certainly make the request.
He has, of course, been into the training ground before and spoken to the squad and done that. I mean, I think his response would be just to fucking twat it, wouldn't it?
Just fucking twat it. That would be his. Just twat it. That's it. Do we think, Chris, do we think Eddie Howe will be able to find some harmony with his strikers?
I'm gonna swing from the chandelier.
That's a tall ask, isn't it, this time of the season?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be whatever it is going to be. It's going to be a stopgap solution until the end of the season because I don't think there's going to be a dramatic upturn. I'd like to think there would be, but so no, I would be not. I would not be surprised if Willasula continues through the middle this weekend. But there is another part of me that would not be surprised if Voldemort was worked into the side somewhere, given the sort of effect he did have coming on last week, and maybe the sort of positive effect he may have on some areas of the crowd. We have heard calls. There was calls in the away end at Arsenal, but there were also calls at Bournemouth from some Newcastle fans before he actually came on for Nick Voldemort to come on. So maybe that would give everyone a bit of a lift. But no, I don't see it being suddenly that Newcastle are going to transform the striker situation, which has plagued their entire season so far.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Right then, chaps, let's move on and we'll catch up with the Lasses' defeat at Bristol City confirms that Newcastle's women will not be promoted to the WSL this season. Ollie actually posted on social media just after 90 minutes of the game that they'd only lost once in the league since September, but of course they immediately then conceded. Goals, the issue, irony won't be lost on some that Amy Andrews, released by Newcastle United in the summer, is joint top scorer in the division with 10 for Sheffield United. Ultimately, George, it's been a big disappointment, hasn't it?
Well, it has to be. It's been another season of sort of big churn on the pitch. You know, lots of players come in, lots of players left in the summer. More came in January. Obviously, Becky Langley left as head coach and manager. And, you know, they will argue that they gave it their all and really pushed for it. But it just hasn't quite happened. And it's never really, if we're being totally honest, felt likely this season. It's always been that they're playing catch up, and the team just haven't quite gelled when it mattered. And it was a huge opportunity this season, two automatic promotion places plus third place going into a playoff, And, you know, the WSL is where they want to be. The reassurance is the noises that we're hearing from the club, which they're still absolutely committed to the women's team. You know, Ross Wilson, it was one of the, that decision about Becky was one of the first things he sort of had to oversee, but they are promising to invest again. They're still getting used to their new home at Gateshead, and, you know, they have new training facilities. There's a lot to be excited about, but it does feel like this season ends up being a disappointment, yeah.
Yes, a big shame for the lasses. I'm sure they'll regroup and go again next season. Look forward to seeing what they do in the new season. Right, let's move on, chaps. The second successive non-televised 3 p.m. kickoff at St James's Park. The last one went really well, didn't it? So what are we going to expect this time? If Eddie Howe was to select any opponent to face next, it would not have been Brighton, just as it wouldn't have been Bournemouth the last time. The record's just not great, Chris, is it?
No, Newcastle haven't beaten Brighton in any of the last six League and Cup meetings, and it's just a one of the teams who they just never seem to play well against. Even when they have had positive results over the last few years, I think there haven't been many games that you can really point to. I think there's one 3-0, but beyond that, I can't think of any real matches where Newcastle have showed up. And Brighton themselves are in wonderful form in the top six, really pushing for even a Europa League place. Yeah, it just, the one of bogey sides alongside Brentford, well, it seems to be all the bees for Eddie Howe. Brentford as well, obviously been an issue this season, Bournemouth. And
well, I mean, to be fair, Chris, it's Arsenal, Bournemouth, Bristol Palace, Bundeland, Barcelona, Belsey. I mean, Palace. Come on. Well, no, actually, they beat Belsey, so I'm not sure that equation quite works. They're just losing to everybody.
All the bees.
But yeah, it's not a kind fixture. Not that you can see any fixtures kind for Newcastle at the moment when they've lost 9 of the last 12 in the Premier League. But this certainly is not one of them, even though it is at home.
Joe Linton's back available after his suspension. What sort of changes do we expect, George?
Yeah, it's interesting. Obviously, it felt at Arsenal as if it was like a bouncing between very different teams. We talked about Bournemouth being the youngest for 20 years, then or 21 years. Then it's a lot more experience against Arsenal. The interesting thing to me is more about whether it becomes a bit more consistent after that, because it was an improved performance and there were some interesting sort of little tactical tweaks. Talked about Joe Willock playing further up the pitch and things like that. And they definitely caught, I mean, albeit I'm still sort of stunned by the sort of just general atmosphere inside the Emirates Stadium at the weekend. It was like, it felt a bit like sort of Newcastle-Sunderland derby matches atmosphere. It was so heavy and laden, and it was just nervousness. So, but Newcastle did quite well. Now, how does that translate to playing at home against Brighton? That's a sort of interesting question. I would think there'll be some changes, but you know, Newcastle, I would say performance-wise and in terms of attitude and commitment, Newcastle did have something to build on. Sorry to be talking about picking up the positives from another defeat. So, you know, does he sort of stick with that kind of formula? Be interesting to see.
Do we expect to see Lewis Hall, Chris? Any chance he'll be recalled?
I would be very surprised if he wasn't. Howe spoke afterwards about largely actually wanting Byrne in the side for his height and physicality. But obviously Hall was hooked at half-time against Bournemouth. Howe didn't like what he was seeing. Sorry, I'm really struggling.
You need some Lewis Hall soothers.
Oh, good. Yeah.
That wasn't very good, was it? I'd be shocked if he wasn't back in the side. Newcastle need more creativity from the fullback positions. A lot of people, again, almost adding to the sort of Voldemort situation, have sort of seen the Hall situation as being a stick to beat Howe with, perhaps fairly, that it felt like Hall had been dug out a little bit for a bad performance against Bournemouth when other players maybe have consistently underperformed and haven't necessarily been pulled out of the situation. But I think there was tactical reasons why he wasn't involved last weekend as well. But at the same time, yeah, I'd be shocked if he wasn't back in the 11.
And it's 5 defeats in the last 6 league games on Tyneside, George. That imperious home record has become anything but, hasn't it? Newcastle have actually been worse at home than away in recent months in the league.
It's just been really distressing, hasn't it? Like, you know,
it's
that feeling of
George.
It's been miserable, yeah, yeah. That feeling of everybody together, you know, no separate, everybody on the same page, everybody wanting the same thing, pushing together, you know, the phrase I always use, the team playing like the crowd sound, you know, just that sort of loud, front foot, aggressive. And, you know, that has been the kind of absolute, you know, beautiful thing about the Eddie Howe era, that there just hasn't been a cigarette paper between any element of the club. Everyone's been on the same page when they've been at their best. And it's just become anything but. Now, I would argue that both Sunderland games will have had an impact. I think sort of the crowd feeling that somehow this Newcastle team does not represent them in the way that they thought they did, and it's become sort of more difficult to sort of drum up an atmosphere. And then, of course, you get into a cycle where you have a bit of fear, you have a bit of anxiety about what's going to happen, or apprehension, and then when something bad happens, it feels like, you know, it feels like that's automatically going to be the way. I mean, the irony, of course, is that probably the worst thing Newcastle can do in a match is take the lead. It's like everyone goes, oh, shit, we've taken the lead. We know what's going to happen now.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's been really sad. And, you know, that cannot continue. That can't continue between now and the end of the season. Newcastle have got to win. They've got to show that there's something to build on. And they've got to win at home. I mean, they just have to.
Yes, they do. And fingers crossed by 5 p.m. on Saturday, we'll have seen their fortunes turn around. Before we sign off, we also want to give big love to Chris Hughton, the former manager of both Newcastle and Brighton. Revealed last week he'd been diagnosed with prostate cancer in April 2025, but having identified the illness at an early stage and having undergone surgery, he has responded well to treatment. Our well wishes go out to him. We hope he continues to react strongly to the illness. I think we'll all echo that.
Yeah, just an astonishingly lovely man who led, of course, Newcastle during some really, really difficult moments, and just did it with huge dignity, and, you know, still loved at Newcastle for what he did. And yeah, we just send him all our best wishes. He's just a great human being.
Right then, that's it, chaps. Let's finish off there. Please get in touch. The email is podonthetyne@gmail.com. Give us a follow on Twitter, X, and Blue Sky @podonthetyne. And if you'd like to subscribe and listen to our back catalogue of other stuff that we've done via Extra Tyne, it's podonthetyne.supportandcast.fm. Thanks very much for your time, chaps. Thanks, Chris.
You're very welcome. I just want to sign off by, I did mention last week, or we did mention, much to my embarrassment, that my GCSE results are framed and in my office. But one thing that is actually framed is in my office, and which I am very proud of, is the first back page I have had for the Chronicle. Not because I framed it, it was actually my auntie Pat, who was like a mother to me, we lost her over the weekend, and so I just wanted to wanted to mention that and pay tribute to her. So.
Chris insisted on doing the podcast over the weekend and also working. I know that I wouldn't have done and haven't done, so I just want to send huge love to Chris. I know I said something nice about him at the start, so let's say something nice about him at the end too. You're a fine human being, Chris, and your Aunt Pat sounds like a lovely woman, and she'll be very proud of you, and we're proud of you too.
Yes, bless you, mate. Sending love to you and to all your family as well. That's it. Thanks to everyone for listening to this episode of Pod on the Tyne. We shall speak to you very, very soon. Take care. See you later. Goodbye.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.